Please silence all electronic devices.
Well, I think you could make that argument. And, you know, these are 60 lawyers. When you factor, I don't know how many lawyers we have in North Carolina. Some people would argue we have too many.
I feel like the Hallelujah chorus is probably getting ready to sing about Becky and I so thoroughly agreeing on something.
Any further discussion or debate?
From the Bunker of Sweatshirts, this is the WUNC Politics Podcast. Glad to have you along for another Friday edition as we try to make some sense of what happened in North Carolina politics. Here, as usual, for our discussion are Rob Schofield from the Progressive NC Policy Watch and Becky Gray with the Conservative John Mock Foundation. Hey there.
Afternoon, guys.
Hey there.
At our respective locations, we're actually taping this week late on a Thursday afternoon. Let's begin with teacher bonuses, a plan to provide teachers with small, one-time bonuses moved through the legislature this week. Legislation would provide teachers with $350 and step increases. Efforts by Democrats to amend the measure and provide larger bonuses were blocked. Bill now goes to the governor. Rob, should the governor veto this proposal?
You know, I don't know, Jeff. I mean, it seems like it's just more of the same. It's the same debate we've had over and over. Education spending, we continue to see it decline as a matter of per pupil spending. It has over the last several years. We don't see any. We understand these are tough times, but I can understand why the teachers feel like, good Lord, we're frontline, you know, workers here. We're putting our lives at risk in many instances. We're going to be expected to do that come fall. And you know, the fact that we're just giving them essentially what amounts to kind of a, a tip, maybe you might consider it, you could understand how they're pretty upset about it. So it seems to me that they are in this for a long haul fight. They have taken the position that they're going to battle this legislature. I think they clearly want to change the composition of the legislature in hopes of bringing about a fundamental shift in how North Carolina funds education. So I wouldn't at all be surprised if they asked for it to be vetoed, but I honestly don't know what the governor will do.
I guess I'll go out on a limb and say that you would be frustrated if the governor were to veto.
Well, yes, I would be frustrated, and I think that the governor would be frustrated with this as well as teachers. I mean, you know, as Rob has mentioned, we are in incredibly difficult times right now. I mean, the projections are that we are facing in the next couple of years, you know, it could be a $5 billion shortfall, and there are a lot of needs across state government. Education, of course, is a top priority for, I think, everyone. But, you know, in these tough times, tough decisions have to be made. And quite frankly, I thought to find the money to be able to give, granted, you know, a small but a bonus and to make good on the step increases that teachers have, you know, was really a very smart and a very responsible, and I think it sends a really good message. Also included in that bill is the option for the governor to use some of the COVID money that he kind of has at his discretion, if you will, to add to those bonuses if he would choose to do that.
I'll just say that whatever happens, I don't think it's settled. I think that teachers are feeling put upon. I think they're seeing maybe that other state employees, the kind that endorse Senator Berger and his colleagues, they get perhaps larger raises. The politics here are very fraught, and I think it's very likely that teachers are going to be upset with this. They're not going to be happy about it, whether it's signed or not signed, and they're going to be fighting like heck come November for a change in the General Assembly.
So the governor has 10 days to sign, veto, or let the measure become law without his signature. As for the bonuses, my understanding is if this does get signed into law or become law, they would be paid out by October 31st. So just a little bit of context there. Also at the legislature, it was an off-again, on-again kind of week as it pertained to temperature checks on West Jones Street. Raleigh, meanwhile, is now requiring face coverings. And there is, as we step back and think big picture about this pandemic, additional research and data demonstrating that wearing a mask, additional research I noted, that wearing a mask helps curb the spread of coronavirus. So I'm wondering, even if it's not necessarily policeable, a mandate may increase participation in those covering their faces. And do you think the legislature and the governor should make a requirement for busy public spaces? Becky?
Well, you know, as you mentioned, I think it's going to be difficult to enforce this kind of thing. You know, but having said that, it makes sense to me to wear a mask. And we've seen the research go back and forth with this, you know, and face coverings, cloth face coverings are different than the kind of mask, Jeff, that your wife wears at work and medical personnel wear. So, I mean, there's a distinction there. You know, I tell you, I mean, I wear a mask and I wear it for two reasons. One is, you know, particularly, and Rob and I have both lost our mothers in the last couple of years. And, you know, I think so often of my mother and how frightened she would be, I think, to and hesitant to go out to the grocery store or, you know, out and about at all. And so any assurances, particularly for older folks and vulnerable folks, you know, I want to do that. And if it makes them feel more comfortable, then I am more than happy to wear a mask. And the other thing is, if in fact what we're hearing is if everybody wears a mask, then the you know, we flatten the curve and people can get back to work and we can get the economy going. And I tell you, I'm willing to do just about anything to make that happen.
I feel like the Hallelujah chorus is probably getting ready to sing about Becky and I so thoroughly agreeing on something. It's, of course, she's absolutely right. There's a new study out actually from Virginia Commonwealth University that just came out that showed that the numbers are just stunning. They studied 198 countries and they found huge reductions in mortalities where people were wearing masks, and even just the mere recommendation of a mask from public officials had a big impact, because it's just increasingly clear that there was that preliminary report from the CDC way back at the start of all this that maybe it didn't make a difference. It gave you a false sense of security. But now the evidence is overwhelming. There's a study at UNC that shows the same thing. Masks, yes, absolutely, let's do it. And yes, if it can help us reopen the economy faster, all for it. And I think that and I agree with Becky that it's, you know, maybe it, you know, we're not going to be sending people to jail in all likelihood because they're not wearing a mask. But my goodness, we all ought to view it as our civic duty.
So quick follow up before we move on. Acknowledging that the governor is long established to be slow and deliberate and methodical, and I'll attribute that to him. I mean, he owns that. He's not an impulsive person, or at least he doesn't claim to be and he doesn't seem to be. Is there a political reason why the governor has not yet mandated masks? Like, what's the rationale behind it, whether that's scientific or political? Like, do you have a thought on that? Because I've been wondering about that this week. It's like, we've seen the data. We've seen a lot more data as to why this makes sense. Why? Because he's a Democrat. He's got cover to do it. Why hasn't he done it yet?
I'll be honest with you. I think there's going to be a backlash if he makes it mandatory. You know, there's that government overreach and there's the nanny state question and all of that. And I think I don't know. I'm not inside the governor's head. But, you know, that may be part of the hesitation of, you know, there will be pushback from this.
I think the governor sees himself as governor of the entire state. He recognizes, my goodness, we've got a cadre of state legislators who refuse to wear masks, even when they're sitting right next to each other. There is, and it's almost exclusively on the right, a political right. It's seen as some sort of macho badge of honor that you're not going to wear your mask and you're going to show how rugged and independent you are. He doesn't want to pick a fight with people. He wants to bring as many people along with him as he can. So I recognize he's been wrestling with this from the start of trying to find a balance of doing what makes sense from a public health perspective, but not, you know, having himself be pilloried and have a huge backlash from people like Becky forecasts. So he's trying to walk that middle ground. He's trying to be governor of the entire state and make the regulations and rules work as you know, as far as they possibly can.
And can I just real quick, you know, Jeff, you mentioned, you know, you asked, you know, is this a political move? I tell you, you know, from the very beginning, and I'm a policy person. I really don't know much about politics, and don't ask me for any advice on any of that kind of stuff, because if I had an opinion, it's probably not a good one. But you know, I just want to think that all of these decisions, whether it's the public health or whether it's the economic health or whether it's the emotional health, that you know, that these decisions are based on things other than the political whims and wins of the day. And I say that across the board for everybody that's been involved in it.
I know you do. You and I have varying degrees of cynicism, and I admire that about you. And I mean that sincerely. A letter signed by more than 60 lawyers was sent to Senate Leader Phil Berger and House Speaker Tim Moore this week. Also, we should note, it was sent to Governor Roy Cooper and also leading legislative Democrats. This collection of legal folks says that the mere presence of Confederate monuments across the state violates the North Carolina Constitution and the time is now for them to be moved. For his part, Senator Berger called the argument creative. Do these statues violate the Constitution, Becky?
Well, I think you could make that argument. And, you know, these are 60 lawyers. When you factor, I don't know how many lawyers we have in North Carolina. Some people would argue we have too many. But, you know, this is a group of people, a group of legal, I don't know whether they're experts or not, but these are people with legal opinions, certainly, and legal experience that have voiced their opinion. You know, I don't know. I mean, I think that really to answer that question, you would have to have a lawsuit that would go through the courts that would be determined by the North Carolina Supreme Court, who, it, you know, is the body that decides those kind of things. So I don't know. I do think, I mean, I will say this, that a lot of people have really strong opinions on this particular issue. And I think that part of the beauty of the system that we have is people being able to express their opinions.
There's so much to say about this. This is a group of very prominent lawyers. There are a lot of law professors involved. There are people who've been worked as assistant attorneys general. I mean, it's a very prestigious group. And they make a very, I think, coherent argument that when you have the state of North Carolina engaged in the process of effectively propagating hate speech, which is what a monument that is dedicated to white supremacy does, it denies people of color, really, I think lots of people, not just people of color, their constitutional rights by sending them the message that the state disfavors them. And is prejudiced and is discriminating against them. I'm not sure that just having some additional monuments dedicated to the memory of people of color is enough. When you have white supremacist speech, I'm not sure the answer is to have non-white supremacist speech. The answer is for the state of North Carolina not to be engaged in promoting that kind of thing. And when it comes, for instance, to naming a building or naming a school, I mean, what are you going to do there? You have to take the name down there. There's no way to, like, put an extra name on there and call it the Jefferson Davis Martin Luther King School. I mean, the subject of white supremacy has to come down. And I think that more and more Americans, especially in the last couple of weeks, have come to this realization. And there is a very fast-growing momentum and a recognition by white people across the country that they have nothing to lose here. There's no loss of losing monuments dedicated to white supremacy. It will do much for the common good of our society. And I just think that it's just a matter of time before this happens. And I think it could happen very quickly that they'll go away.
Let's turn our discussion to the district. June means big decisions from the Supreme Court, oftentimes. Among the notable rulings from the High Court this week, employers cannot discriminate against gay or transgender employees, and a legal win for about 650,000 so-called Dreamers, undocumented immigrants who arrived here as children. President Trump's administration has tried to dismantle the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, the DACA program. Justice Roberts sided with the court's more liberal justices in what is seen as a significant defeat for the president. What do these rulings mean for our fellow North Carolinians?
Well, it's obviously a great day for a lot of people who really thought they might not see this in the near future, even in their lifetimes. There are a lot of people who've been living really in terror. A lot of people, when you talk to folks in the immigrant community, we had a story on NC Policy Watch about a 30-year-old immigrant who's been here since he was 18 months old, and he's a DACA kid, not a kid anymore. And the notion that he would have been sent back to a country that he doesn't even know was terrifying to him. And the same thing, of course, holds when it comes to LGBTQ rights. The notion that you could be fired, it's really sort of preposterous that it's taken to 2020 for us to get a ruling like this. It seems to me that going forward is what, in both areas, we need comprehensive affirmative legislation to both guarantee citizenship rights for these young people and to integrate them fully into our society and to make absolutely clear that we have a human rights law in our state, as many other states and municipalities do, that forbids discrimination of any kind against LGBTQ people, as has, you know, this goes back to the whole bathroom debate. This is a huge victory for progress in our society on both counts and a big defeat for Trump. And I think indicative of how the country is very rapidly, even amongst conservatives, moving away from Trump and Trumpism and sort of this extreme view of the Constitution.
Really what this is about, it's not whether or not to cancel the programs on the DACA thing. It's about the process that the president used. And it seems to me that what the court did is they sort of teed it up for him and said, okay, you did not have the power to do he had the power to end it, but the reasons that he gave, and he failed to follow the process to do so. So it's more of a process question. I mean, they said themselves, they being the court, said themselves, they're not really in a position, and this, the issue is not the policy of it. It's the process that even presidents have to go to. And I think that is an important point, just as a reminder that there is a process in point, and that the rule of law applies when the process is followed. And, you know, that's very weedy, and, you know, for a lot of regular folks, in particular on these very emotional issues, that people have very strong feelings one way or the other. And I think I think it's unfortunate that the president has responded by saying things like, well, the Supreme Court justices don't like me, or, you know, we should get different Supreme Court justices. I think that is damaging to the system. And again, I think it goes back to who has the authority to act in certain ways. And in this case, and I think that there was a problem when Obama made the original decision with DACA, that this really is a role of Congress.
Do you think that the president's going to make another run around at dismantling or doing away with DACA here in this election year?
Anybody that tries to predict what this irresponsible, juvenile, you know, just con man who's in the White House would try to do next is, you know, I don't know. It's impossible to say, but I wouldn't be surprised if he tries. I don't think there's any chance, however, that before the election, that there's any chance that we're going to see some sort of enforceable ruling that's going to remove millions of good Americans from this country because of this, you know, some new effort by Trump. I think this is a clear sign that we have got to, and that Congress will have to act to pass comprehensive reform that at a minimum allows these people to have a path to citizenship. And I can't imagine that the country is going to let Trump get away with something like that. But you never know what that man will try.
Rob Schofield is director of NC Policy Watch. Becky Gray is senior vice president at the John Locke Foundation. Enjoy your weekends.
Stay safe, guys.
Have a good weekend. Thanks.
Hey, don't forget, a portion of this conversation between Becky and Rob airs on Friday afternoons on the Actual Radio 450 on WUNC. You can, of course, check out some of our other podcast conversations as well. Had an extended chat with Paul Wolverton, longtime Fayetteville Observer reporter. That came out earlier this week. Some pretty good stories from Paul in there. You should go over and give that one a listen as well. Remember, it's iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. And as you're seeking more context and narratives about the COVID-19 pandemic across North Carolina, make sure you tap on that play button for the podcast Tested. That'll do it for this edition of the WUNC Politics Podcast. For Becky and Rob, I'm Jeff. Please enjoy your weekend.